Spotlight. This is Akashvani. In the program Spotlight, now we bring you an exclusive interview with Arvind Virmani, member Niti Aayog on Union Budget 2026-27. Interviewer is Sonu Sood.
Honorable Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman presented the Union Budget 2026-27 in the Parliament yesterday. To help us get an insight on the key highlights of the budget, we have eminent economist and member Niti Aayog, Dr. Arvind Virmani with us. Dr. Virmani, a warm welcome to you from Akashvani. Dr. Virmani, the budget is no longer seen just as a financial exercise, but also as an indicator of policy priorities of the government. In that context, what would you say are the key areas of focus for 2026-27 outlined in the budget which was presented yesterday?
As an economist, I generally think of one simple sentence which defines the Honorable Prime Minister's goal of having a Viksit Bharat by 2047. It is sustained, fast, inclusive growth. So each word of those words has a meaning, but I'm just giving you the context in which I, as an economist, look at it, that what can we do to make sure that it happens. So from that perspective, there are two or three things I would say which, for me and for this limited perspective, economic perspective, one of course is the macro fiscal stability, which has been a goal of this government right from day one, 11 years or 12 years ago. And that really becomes even more important when the whole world is kind of in turmoil and there's a lot of uncertainty, because we know from historical experience that having a stable and good fiscal balance then allows monetary policy enough room to deal with shocks. We have seen many countries across the world that the combination of kind of slightly tighter fiscal policy and looser monetary policy helps you overcome these shocks very efficiently, actually. The second point I would make is that, in a sense, that one has to see this in the context of the last budget or last few budgets, that for the first time, I would say, I've been tens of budgets I have participated in, I've seen for 2-3 decades, but the big emphasis since the last budget on skills, on skilling the labor force, the potential labor force, the actual labor force. And I have a simple one-line slogan. I like to have these one-liners. I've given you one already. The second one is, skills and jobs are two sides of the same coin. This is very different from the conventional wisdom that there are all these job seekers and you've got to create jobs. So I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying if there are enough skills or you create the skills, the jobs will be there. One simple way to understand it is that 58% of Indian workers are self-employed. There's no such thing as a job which they go to. They are self-employed. They create the job. So the more skilled they are, the more productive they are, the better the job is, because they are doing it themselves. So Imagine 58%, it's not big deal. Compared to that, the really what we think of as jobs or employed is like 19% of the workers only. And the third one is an overlap of this, which is services. Now, manufacturing is very important, and we will discuss the importance of that, and particularly in the global context now, with all these uncertainties arising from policies of different countries, bans, restrictions, tariffs, etc. But services is very important because it can create jobs at every level of skills. You know, we think of services as IT services. No, the way I think of services is low-level jobs, medium-skilled. Example of medium-skilled jobs is like electricians and plumbers. There's a demand not only in India but all over the world. So every level services, even manufacturing, if you think of it, the direct jobs are on the assembly line, and that's very good because it's absorbing a lot of women workers in electronics and etc., which is great. But even much of the indirect job will actually be what we would define as services. So even when we talk of manufacturing direct and indirect jobs, many of those are services related to manufacturing.
Supporting manufacturing.
That's right. So to me, the big message, which frankly you could say I'm biased because these are the things I've been working on besides industry, but these are the real messages. And the interesting thing you will notice is that the skill thing is now being mentioned in every context, whether we talk about the chemical industry, we talk about health, we are talking about auxiliary health personnel, we are talking about skilling, you talk about tourism, we are talking about training tourism guides. All these will create jobs. It is not just a job for which you train somebody, but you train people and the jobs appear, to exaggerate a little bit. So in the budget itself, it's mentioned tourism, AHP, sports. But my point is, it's generalizable. It's all across the spectrum. And if you look for individual, you'll find skills mentioned all over the budget.
The current government has always given, you know, more priority to capital expenditure over revenue expenditure. And the government capex for 2026-27 is 9% higher than last year. Can you tell us how this priority and this momentum in capex, how does it benefit the economy at large?
Over the last 4 years or so, the capital expenditures have increased. I think till last budget, it was roughly 33% per year or something. So there's two things. One, what drove that process, that was one to improve the quality of the expenditures. An economic fact, which again comes from economists in India, that the multiplier effect of government capital expenditure is about 2.5, while the revenue expenditure multiplier is like 1 or even less for certain types of expenditures. That was the motivation, both these, to improve the quality of the budget expenditures and to utilize this multiplier to revive the economy after the pandemic. From an economist's perspective, I think the expenditure on infrastructure was very good.
MSMEs have always been a focus area for your government, and they have been allocated 10,000 rupees fund for creating champion SMEs. Can you tell us more about this?
By definition, MSME and corporation, there are many different categories, right? Unlike in many other countries, we have a huge diversity. We have a formal sector, informal sector, micro, mini, small, etc. So that is why you see, for an outsider, I am trying to explain why you may see so many different schemes, because each thing is somewhat different. They have different requirements, they have different gaps. Again, from a national perspective, we have to cater to all these. The states will then choose what is more relevant for themselves. Local infrastructure is most important for small enterprises. So that is a new thing which we are emphasizing, you know, that large mega parks, etc., was going fine. But in the process, the legacy areas were kind of not receiving sufficient attention. So the government decided that you need to put a little more emphasis on that and bring it to the attention. Ultimately, national government cannot operate at that level. It has to be the state. So what we try to do is bring it to attention, give a little nudge, give a little help. So that is one thing. But the general things are like income tax reform. So, right, we've got a new law which was passed, which was proposed in the budget of last year. Current budget shows that we are very focused on doing a simplification through the rules and forms, right? So there's a lot of process reform which will affect MSMEs, small, large, all of them. And then the third one, which you mentioned specifically, but the equity part, for example, we have done like two or three reports on different segments of MSME, and we've done on sectors, we have done cross-cutting reports. So one of the things, one of these reports revealed is that there is a gap that we generally think of the small part. We don't think of the medium, MSME, right? The last M. Okay, because we want them to become super. I mean, they should not just be medium.
Yeah,
they should become corporate. They should stride the world. So there was a gap from going from that medium to large. So one of the objectives of this equity fund is to see which
scale them up.
Yeah, which are capable of meeting the higher quality standards, the international standards, and operating on the global stage.
In fact, in the budget, the interesting announcements have been made. One is the She Marts, you know, self-help entrepreneurship mart. How important are these to help the rural population really expand their avenues of income? And even Bharat Vistar, which is going to use AI to help improve farmers' productivity.
First, let me take the last question because it relates to AI. You know, I mentioned that we are planning to or thinking or trying to use AI differently from the other countries because of our demographics. So one of the issues which again comes up is the information problems. I think more than 50%, if I remember correctly, of our farmers are small and marginal. They're not clued into everything. They are focused on their land. So bringing that knowledge and information which is relevant to that. The point is to use AI to create this information basis. So that is what one of them is mentioned in the budget. There are many others which we have been trying. A platform for MSMEs, a platform for agriculture where the AI helps the farmer. So one of the proposals is to join the ICAR base of practices with the platform which we have already, Agriculture Ministry, has done, to join them so that the AI can use these practices to advise individual people. I talked to an NGO which is setting up these rural marts.
These self-help entrepreneurship.
Yeah, these marts. Are kind of social entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Now, government cannot do everything, but we can provide a little help. So this is in the line of that, that if these marts are being set up, is there something we can do to help women entrepreneurs in the local areas start thinking? So that's another idea.
Yeah. Whether we talk of Bharat Vistar, whether we talk of She Marts or all the other advances that are being made through AI, through technology, that has been enabled by the digital public infrastructure that has been created by our government, where remotely located person is able to connect digitally and is able to avail of these services.
In economics, we have the concept of public goods. By the way, I'm giving you my view, but as an economist, I can only speak to other economists or those who want an economic view. The economic theory tells us that government should be providing the policy framework and institutional framework to ease, that's translated into Honorable PM's ease of doing business, and the second part is the public goods. The digital public goods are a part of that, right? So you build, it's again, I always use a pyramid analogy, you build layer by layer, right? So the foundation of that was UDI, okay, which got translated into Aadhaar when authority was set up. You will see that the authority was originally called UDI authority. That is what my report, which we did in 2006, had proposed. So then it became Aadhaar. And you had this, the first layer. Then on top of that, you built UPI and you build. So that is the basic public good which has to be provided by government. That is the standard economic theory. After that, the private sector must compete and provide the services, the production, etc. So yes, so the issue for all these things is what is the missing public goods which we need to provide. That's what we are constantly looking. You know, what is infrastructure? It's what we call public goods infrastructure. Mm. Okay? Things which can be provided privately, like telecom now. Earlier, the technology was large scale. It couldn't be provided privately. Okay? We used to have government companies in US. They had a monopoly which they tried to break up. But with the new technology, they are competitive. So when there's market competition, government doesn't need to do. It just need to provide the policy framework. So that is the whole idea, that we should focus on this public goods wherever they are missing, and also to reduce risk, because risk is always a killer. So wherever government can help to reduce risk and so on and provide the policy framework, that's the whole approach.
So would you say this budget, with its thrust on skilling, on entrepreneurship, on inclusivity, it sets the tone for our exciting yet challenging journey towards Viksit Bharat by 2047?
Yeah, so the key one which we haven't discussed at all is the reform. I think that's one of the biggest things which kind of is not getting enough attention, particularly abroad, because it's very important for them to understand. In my view, 2 points I want to make on that. Honorable PM has of course said the reform express has left the station and is accelerating. So the budget also has some reform, but that's not the important point I want to make. I think the reform, which 2 points. One, that the reform which have already happened in the last year and before that over the last 10 years will raise the growth potential of the economy by 0.5%. And I said this several months ago to an international group which came to meet me. But I think this reform will continue given the big commitment of Prime Minister on this, and will have an increase in the growth potential by 1%, from 0.5 to 1%. Second point I want to make, these are the biggest reforms since 91. And in my view, once they are completed, when we get that 1% shift, they will be the biggest reforms in our history.
Thank you so much for this intensive discussion on the budget and the priorities of the government and the road forward.
Thank you.
You are listening to an exclusive interview with Arvind Virmani, member Niti Aayog on Union Budget 2026-27. Interviewer was Sonu Sood. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. Spotlight.